Hi everyone, and welcome to 4Panel, the Geek Show's dedicated comics, manga, and graphic novel podcast. My name's Rob, and joining me today are Andrew.
Hello.
Hello, Mr. Comic Sage, and Mick.
Hello.
Hello, Old Man Comics.
That was a really weird hello I did.
Yes. Yes, it was. How are you guys anyway today?
Stressed.
Still slightly perplexed by what came out of my mouth, which I think is probably a good lead-in for today's theme.
Yeah, yes, it is. To be fair, you just know what our listeners feel like every week.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Is this what it's like being on the other side of the glass?
Yes. A sea of people perplexed by what comes out of our mouth.
Well, small puddle of people.
Depends. Okay. Are these people rather large? In which case, it could double as a sea.
We don't know. We would.
That's good, Rob. Insult the audience.
Yeah. We would not presume to judge or prejudge the lifestyles of our audience. We're not like you, Rob.
And
we're quite glad of that, aren't we, Andrew?
I think I'm going to put that in the win column.
Woke up this morning, wasn't like Rob. Kazing!
Okay, so what are we talking about today?
Well, I believe...
Yes, Mick, I think you have a question for the class.
I do. I have a question to put to you, Osage. I would like to ask the question.
Ask it.
I would like to ask the question. Who exactly is Venom?
Oh, well, it's funny you should ask that, Mick, completely unprompted.
I know.
Because he just so happens to have a movie out this week.
Does he? Yeah.
And so explaining him would be some kind of excellent synergy.
It would, wouldn't it?
Is this the movie that had that bit in the trailer, like a turd in the wind?
No, that's an Elton John unused single.
I thought it sounded familiar.
Anyway, yes, we did think, since, you know, Venom, movie, big bucks, riding on its coattails, we'll talk about just who is this Venom bloke?
I also have some follow-up questions, but we'll come to those later. Who is Venom?
Good, because the short answer is, it's complicated.
Excellent.
No, we wanted to know who he is, not his Facebook status.
Okay, so Venom is a character we're talking about who basically first debuted in about 1984, and then also first debuted about 4 years later in 1988.
Whoa. He had two first debuts?
Yes, he did. Because, you see, Venom is, well, as anyone who's seen the trailer probably knows, is a combination of reporter Eddie Brock and an alien gloopy symbiote.
Ah. But that's not always been the case, has it?
No, the symbiote is actually the bit that was introduced initially back during the original Secret Wars. I think it might have been Marvel's like first big proper event.
I think it was, actually, because I remember from when I was a kid, they used it to sell a hell of a lot of toys.
Yes, that was literally the reason the entire series was written, to sell toys.
People doubt me when I say that, but that was exactly it.
Which, hey, if it works for Transformers.
Yeah.
So, anyway, the plot of that story is a bunch of superheroes get kidnapped and taken to an alien world where they have to fight a bunch of supervillains. It's not overly complicated.
No.
Also quite fun.
Yeah, I was going to say, although it was a lot of fun to read, and there was a lot of kind of crossing and double-crossing. There was an occasion where Charles Xavier, Magneto set up shop somewhere else, and Charles Xavier decides that the X-Men are basically going to go and join Magneto and side against the heroes and the villains. So the mutants would actually be a third player on this stage as well. Spider-Man hears it, and Xavier basically wipes his memory of it.
Yep, that's true. And hey, speaking of Spider-Man, another thing that he finds is a machine that can make clothing.
Yep.
And so in the series, he uses that to replace his ripped-up costume with a fancy-pantsy new black one.
Oh, yeah, the black costume.
Yeah, and so for kind of a good long while, that was just Spider-Man's costume.
Yeah, there was a bit in a later issue of Spider-Man where he puts on the black costume because he's going down into the sewers. And it brings back bad memories for Mary Jane.
It does, for reasons we'll get to.
Yep.
Okay.
Because after a good few years of swinging around in this black alien costume, Peter Parker finally thinks, hey, maybe I should actually check out this alien goo that's like covered my entire body.
Hold on. Does this mean Peter Parker's related to those scientists from Alien?
Yes. he is absolutely a Ridley Scott scientist.
It's true. It's very true.
I mean, it literally is, because it's, oh, look, here's a pile of black alien goo. Gonna stick my hand in it.
See, so, this, yeah. This is what I love about this entirety of Venom. It is basically Ridley Scott scientist meets Stan Lee science.
Yes. So, all right, so Peter, he eventually checks out the suit and finds out it's actually an alien symbiote that's been trying to, like, bond with him on a molecular level and, like, take over his life.
So if that's the case, how does he get the black suit off?
Well, what happens is he actually discovers one of Venom's two big weaknesses, which is that it's incredibly sensitive to sound. So you get this quite famous Spider-Man panel of him just, like, standing on top of a church as all the bells chime, just, like, tearing the suit off of him. It's pretty rad.
It was actually one of the better scenes from the third Spider-Man movie, that bit of where he's actually in the bell tower tearing the symbiote off him. The rest of the movie was pants up.
Yeah. Yeah. But Sandman was good.
Yeah, Sandman was good, but, you know.
But yeah, I think it's also... Man, I can't remember if this scene was, like, actually in the comics or if it was maybe, like, in one of the cartoons or something.
Oh.
But I remember there's a bit, which basically is why Spider-Man hates the black suit so much. It's where he's fighting Rhino and, like, he's losing very badly. And then he just kind of snaps and the suit takes over and, like, nearly beats the Rhino to death.
That's the comics. They wouldn't have put that in the cartoon. But that is definitely in the comics.
Yeah, that does seem a bit dark for a cartoon.
Well, I know that's the comics because I've got that issue as well, where he almost beats the Rhino to death.
Yeah, but I like that because that's kind of just a great example of, oh, this is why this is a bad idea.
And if they'd done...
Because this suit is, like, actually kind of psychotic.
Yeah, and if they'd done that in the third Spider-Man movie instead of that stupid dance...
This is where I now doubt whether I've actually seen the third Spider-Man movie.
You've not seen Peter Parker dancing down the street with, like, his slicked down emo haircut.
It's a sight to behold, Mick.
I think I may have forgotten it on purpose.
I think you must not have seen it, because no one can forget Tobey Maguire turning to camera and whispering, "Now dig on this."
I think that rewatching Spider-Man 3 may cause me to require a refund on years of therapy.
You don't need to rewatch the whole of it. Just go onto YouTube and watch that bit. That's all you need to do.
Podcast warning. Mick, Rob and Andrew are trained professionals. Please do not watch Spider-Man 3 at home.
Ever. Ever. Even, especially if it's on TV.
Yeah. So anyway, that's kind of one half of Venom explained.
Okay, so we've kind of covered a bit of who and how.
Well,
the other part of how is there two of him?
Well, that's the thing. We've only kind of half covered who.
Yes, because the other half of Venom is reporter Eddie Brock, who... Well, I've actually misremembered him, because I thought he'd been in the comics for a while, but I think he was actually introduced kind of when he became Venom. And I sort of retroactively explain that he's this reporter who was working on a story about a villain called the Sin Eater, who was basically going around killing people. And he got what he thought was an exclusive confession. But then Spider-Man revealed that actually the guy who confessed was just... like one of those serial confessors who'll just, you know, run around saying they did whatever crime you want to put on them. So that basically ruined his career, and he spent ages hating Spider-Man and wishing he could find a way to get back at him. And oh hey, guess who he bumped into who also hates Spider-Man now?
Was it by any chance a suspicious looking pool of alien black goo?
Yep, Peter Parker's ex.
That's no way to talk about Mary Jane.
Yeah, basically, you know, it's one of those classic love stories. Super jacked ex-bitter reporter meets gloopy, also bitter, alien homicidal maniac.
Yep.
They bond, become big, bulky, bad Spider-Man.
Yep, who eats things and people.
I was going to say, when you say things, do you mean villains and good guys?
Yeah, Venom's kind of hungry, you know.
Which, interesting slash horrifying fact about Venom and his eating people is that in his first appearance, he didn't do that for what now seems like the super unsettling reason that he just had normal teeth.
What? Yeah. All those weird fang things that Venom has, he didn't have them right at the start.
Yeah, because I mean, at the start, he was basically Spider-Man's black costume, but beefier and with a mouth. And it just, like, going back and seeing that issue now, it just looks so wrong.
Yeah. And the thing is, that I find that version of Venom more disturbing than the current version.
Yeah, because it's just, it's not right.
Yeah.
Where are the fangs? Where's the giant tongue?
Well, the thing is, I look at that version of Venom, I'm like, he looks almost normal. That's more terrifying.
But now also, we get to the super weird part of Venom.
Because up to now, of course, it's all been completely straightforward and normal.
Yeah, but that's all right, because if you want to go watch the film, none of that matters.
Yeah, this is true. But just quickly jumping in, Andrew, didn't Flash Thompson also become Venom at one point?
Yes, he did later on down the line. There's actually been a number of different Venom hosts.
Yeah, because...
We'll probably get into a bit later.
Yeah, because I remember J. Jonah Jameson's son, the astronaut. Was he an astronaut all the time? But then I think he became Venom at one point as well.
Astronaut slash werewolf.
Astronaut slash werewolf, yeah.
I love comics.
Yeah, I know. Didn't he become Venom at one point as well?
I don't think he did in the normal comics.
Oh, was that from the cartoon where he became Venom?
That might have been a cartoon or like a what-if issue.
Ah, right, okay. It's all very bizarre.
Okay, so we've covered who, kind of covered how.
Well,
why? Why is Venom?
Well, what, I think, first.
We've kind of covered that as well, but...
Yeah, he's basically alien scary Spider-Man.
Yeah, but the thing is, you said there's more than one, and there's an entire planet of symbiotes.
Oh, yeah, because that's kind of part of the backstory, is how Venom's symbiote ended up on that alien planet.
Yeah.
Is he was basically imprisoned there by his race for being too crazy.
The rest of the symbiotes on the planet are kind of placid, but in like, because I think I covered it recently with some of the Venom trade paperbacks that we've covered, where they have like somebody's kidnapping the symbiotes off that planet and enslaving them and forcing them onto people and then enslaving those people with these weird stone masks. And apparently those people are effectively dead at that point. Yeah.
Yeah. Which I mean, I think kind of makes sense because, you know, symbiosis is having like an equally harmonious relationship, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Which begs the question, this planet of symbiotes, who do they have that with?
Well, apparently nobody. They just kind of gloop around doing gloopy stuff.
The key thing about most symbiotes is that if they don't have a host, they wither and die because they need something from the
Stanley science.
Unless it's maybe like one of those their planet, like that environment they can survive in.
Well, this
but anything idea. Outside that they need to bond with.
This is true. There is a possibility.
So I've found myself a list of Venom hosts.
Okay.
And this is where we get Andrew to earn his Sage credentials.
Okay.
Okay.
Cracks fingers.
So we've covered Venom the symbiote.
Yeah.
We've covered Spider-Man.
Yep.
We've covered Eddie Brock.
Yeah.
More accurately, Venom has covered Eddie Brock.
Yeah.
Oh.
Angelo Fortunato.
Oh, I got you there. So, Venom, he was a Spider-Man enemy for quite a few years, then sort of kind of more of an anti-hero slash ally.
Yeah.
I think because Venom ended up being so popular that they basically made him into more of his own thing. But eventually, he kind of faded in sort of the lesser rungs of Spider-Man's rogues gallery. So in the, I think, kind of early to mid-2000s, one of the ideas to kind of revamp the character was basically saying, okay, so this alien symbiote can bond to anyone. Why don't we just have him be someone who isn't Eddie Brock and see how that changes things? So there was this big story where Eddie basically finds out he has cancer. And so wants to repent from a life of, you know, eating limbs and rolling people down the street like the turds in the wind. So he decides to auction off the symbiotes, basically, you know, at some big crime auction. And Angelo is the son of a mobster who buys the suit, bonds with it, and becomes the new Venom for about 5 minutes.
I remember this.
Then the Venom suit decides, nah, this guy's a bit of a tool, I don't like him. So as they're leaping from building to building, Venom just abandons him.
Yeah, I do remember this.
And moves on to our next host.
Okay, who is that?
He was a person I'll say after Rob. Did you want to say something?
No, it's fine. You continue.
Because next on my list is another villain.
Yes. So what happened was the Venom symbiote, it sensed that there was someone who, like Eddie, had a grudge against Spider-Man. And so it said, you know, that's who I want to bond with. And that person was Matt Gargan, a.k.a. the Scorpion.
Oh, yes. I forgot there was a Scorpion Venom thing going on as well, wasn't there?
I mean, that kind of makes sense.
Yeah, scorpions, they're poisonous. Venom is poisony.
So then we got Flash Thompson, who we've mentioned previously.
Mm. Yeah, Flash was eventually the US government captured the symbiotes, like from Matt Gargan, and they decided, hey, what if we use this? And so they bonded it to Flash Thompson.
Because, of course, that would always end so well.
Yeah.
I mean, it surprisingly did. It was a really great series by Rick Remender. It's basically Flash Thompson, the ultimate Spider-Man fanboy, trying to be Spider-Man, but like using a thing that absolutely hates Spider-Man and just finding, oh, wait, no, this is actually really hard.
Yeah. I mean, didn't Flash Thompson eventually become that anti-Venom thing?
Yes, he did. That was actually quite recently. And then, spoilers, by the way, so people might want to skip like the next few seconds of podcast, he got deaded by the Green Goblin.
Yes, he did.
And I was sad.
I didn't mind Flash Thompson.
Okay, I have a number 7 on my list. Anne Weying.
Sorry?
Anne Weying.
A.K.A. She-Venom.
Yep.
That was Eddie Brock's ex-wife, who also, I think, like, initially she had the symbiote for a little while, but then she got, like, a clone of the symbiote, and then she didn't, and then she developed a phobia of Venom and jumped out a window.
Okay.
Comics are bad to women sometimes.
They are.
Patricia Robertson.
The next She-Venom, and like, I'll admit that this is one of those areas where I'm not super sure who she is. Like, I think she was in the army.
She was. She was in the army.
Also found a clone of Venom and so became She-Venom for a bit.
Yeah.
And then no one really liked her, so she disappeared.
And the next one on my list is someone else who's featured in this Who Is segment of the show. Carol Danvers, a.k.a. Captain Marvel.
I do not remember that, actually. I think that must have been just like a story arc and something.
I think it was a story arc because if you go by the Venomverse thing that they've done recently and by those trade paperbacks of who's been Venom, then you could say the majority of the X-Men and various things like that.
Oh, yeah, I think it's like it's a fairly common storyline of, oh, look, Venom's possessed someone.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going by the main Venom hosts, wasn't there like an Army Ranger guy? Lee something.
Freaking Lee. Yeah, he was like the Venom series before the current one.
Yeah.
Lee Price. Like,
that's him, yeah.
I keep wanting to call him Lee Pace, but that's an actor.
in this list, as you pointed out, Rob, there's a list that includes Doc Ock, Thunderbolt Ross, Captain America, Black Bolt.
Oh, Blackagar Boltagon, yay.
Galactus. That must have been freaky.
Yeah, Venom Galactus.
Yeah, that's a big old stretch for Venom.
Make sure he doesn't squat and tear the symbiote.
Oh, dear. Thor.
Yeah.
Wolverine.
Again, all of the you know, several of these characters in that Venomverse thing or whatever, or the trade paperback that I covered anyway on Four Panels several podcasts ago. They actually had like this entire war going on between the symbiotes and this other, I can't remember the name of them, some insect type thing. And you had venomized Thor and venomized Hercules and venomized Captain America and venomized everybody, basically.
There's a Venom Hulk. I quite like the sound of that.
Yeah, Hulk got venomized.
And someone with the incredibly realistic name of Kron Stone.
Oh, I think that's Venom 2099.
Oh!
What I like is that on this list, it's Kron Stone, a.k.a. Kron Stone.
Mm. But on that list, does it have the Kree fella?
It's got Normie Osborn and Spider-Girl May Parker.
Yeah, because there was a Kree fella who was Venom's first host.
Well, oh, no, I think you mean the noble Kree warrior Fel-R.
Is it Fel-R?
No, probably not.
But didn't it begin with a T?
Probably. I have not read the most recent Venom series yet.
Yeah.
Oh, to be fair, is it not possible that any of those other Marvel characters that I've mentioned could have been a Kree? Or is that the Skrull?
That's the Skrulls.
Ah, right.
The Skrulls are the shape-shifting frog boys, the chilly fellas, because their face is blue.
Yeah. See, that speciesist, Mick, saying that all aliens look the same.
I didn't say that.
You insinuated.
In actual fact, what I actually said was the exact opposite, that any of those superheroes could have been an alien imposter, saying that those alien imposters all looked very different. I may have got mixed up with the naming, because a lot of this happened in the 90s when I didn't read comics, if you recall.
This is true.
Which is a recurring thing.
Reenacting that Mitchell and Webb sketch of Battlestar Galactica.
Okay.
Well, like, they're all huddled around going, any one of us could be a Cylon. Who do you think it is, Roger? Cut like Bobby the Robot. Beep loop, I don't know, give me oil.
Anyway, I have one final question about Venom.
Is he totally tubular? Because the answer is yes.
Okay. No, that wasn't the question.
Okay, you can have that one for free then.
Wow, thank you. What? Anyway, where is Venom?
Well, Venom is in cinemas across the country.
Wow.
Yeah. I have a question.
Yeah?
Yeah, I have a question, and it is related. So, Andrew, how the hell does Carnage fit into all this?
Oh, that's obvious, Rob.
Yeah,
Carnage
Rob.
Carnage is Venom's son that he accidentally pooped out one day and then bonded with a serial killer.
I had to ask, because I knew Mick probably didn't know the answer.
Supplemental question. What's Venom Space Knight all about then?
That's one of the Flash Thompson ones where he basically goes off into space and becomes a space knight.
Yep.
That was one of those. I think that's actually the one that established that the symbiotes are naturally quite peaceful.
Hmm. Oh, who was it? You know when after the Venom, I think it was, you know when...
Having one more question, you guys seem to have quite a lot of questions.
No, I'm trying to remember her name.
We're like Paxman on University Challenge. You get a starter for 10.
Ah, right. Not that these are my bonuses.
And these are your bonuses.
Yeah. Because there was... I've forgotten. She was being trained by Flash Thompson to be the new Venom.
Oh, yeah. And it was like Mania, I think.
Yeah, Mania. That's it.
Wouldn't you need, like, extra symbiotes for that to happen? Or you'd have to keep, like, removing your symbiote and passing it on to your student, and then she
See, she just has like a part of Flash's symbiote.
Yeah,
it got possessed by a demon.
Yeah,
of course it did. Yeah. Because,
then it got exercised.
Yeah, then it got exercised. But also, I think in that issue, you had like this weird love triangle between Flash Thompson, Eddie Brock, and the symbiote, who wanted to be with both of them but couldn't decide, man.
Yeah, I think what's ended up happening now is that Lee guy who we mentioned earlier,
yeah,
he stole the symbiote off Flash, but then Eddie stole it off of him, so that Lee stole the other symbiote off of Mania, and then Flash became anti-Venom, and now we're at the present.
Yeah. Diagrams of this plotline can be bought from the Geek Show's dedicated shop.
We might put it on a t-shirt.
I mean, it's just terrible.
Well, I don't know about you guys, but I think I need a break after all that.
Yeah, let's try and untangle this knot of ooze.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Apparently Venom was in the animated special for Phineas and Ferb, and it was voiced by Danny Trejo.
Sure.
So you had
Why not, Rob? Why the hell?
I know, I'm just like, so Venom was Mexican?
This is Sonny Strait, the voice of many of the voices that you grew up on. Yes, I raised all of you ungrateful bastards, and you're listening to The Geek Show. Kamehameha, bitches!
We went to EGX recently, and the video interviews for that are actually going up on YouTube as we speak, so do check out our YouTube channel and find out what's coming soon from the world of indie video games. All of our other shows can be found on our website or the podcast provider of your choice. So head over to thegeekshow.co.uk and you'll find everything that we do. There's also a shop and Patreon on there.
If you've enjoyed us rambling a bit about Venom, you can hear, probably some of us do that some more on this week's episode of Cinema Eclectica, where we will be reviewing the movie.
Yeah, that's true. So
it's probably not going to be good.
No, I disagree, Andrew. I think the reviews will be excellent.
Is this going to be another four-panel takes over Eclectica again?
Yes, but we haven't told them yet.
Okay. I shall look forward to it.
There really is nothing like a first leather-bound edition of a classic Victorian podcast. Hello, we're Literally Loitering from The Geek Show, and we cover literally all types of books, from hardbacks to paperbacks to sometimes the words within them. If any of these things interest you, why not pop in and give us a visit on Literary Loitering.
Hi, it's Dave from Geek Corner. If you really love cosplay and you like to get dressed up as your favourite characters from TV and movies, whatever it is that you like to dress as, get yourselves down to Geek Corner in Stockton-on-Tees in the Regency West Mall. We actually make cosplay props and costuming props. They're generally made from foam and stuff, so they're perfectly safe to have out in the public. So come along, say hi.
Welcome back, and now it's time for comics and stuff. So, Andrew, take it away.
Yep, okay, so I will be kicking things off with The Suit by Dennis Calero. This is from Dark Horse. It's a original graphic novel about, well, as the blurb says, when a corporate merger becomes a hostile takeover. So this is a man who goes by The Suit and exists in a world where he is a private assassin for a major corporation.
Okay.
But basically, as Dennis Calero explains in the introduction, it's all based off this idea of what if James Bond worked for a corporation instead of the government?
Okay.
And yes, it is that idea on a very basic level.
Isn't that like the same sort of idea they had in Deus Ex? You know, the new Deus Ex games?
I mean, kind of, but like even less ambiguous. Like, the company he works for is pretty obviously corrupt and, you know, want to assure their dominance of the business world by wiping out any of their competition. But then the suit gets betrayed by the son of one of the company's founders, who then tries to kill him, and he's got to go run for his life and do some action stuff, and then teams up with the rest of the company who had, like, allied with the guys who he thought he was supposed to be wiping out. And then they kill the son, and it's all fine.
Sounds a bit like Golgo 13 in parts.
And probably. It's just, I think it's an, because it seems like a concept you could do a lot with.
Yeah.
But it's just this very surface level. He is, I mean, he could essentially be a spy doing anything.
See, when you said what if James Bond worked for a company? I thought there was going to be like corporate espionage, and he's going to be dressing up in disguises and sneaking into other companies and stuff like that.
Yeah, no, I mean, this basically is the same as if he worked for the government, except the people there say, and also this is a corporation. Like, there's nothing about like corporate espionage or even, because it feels like it's supposed to be about the idea that, like, you know, greed is bad and like capitalism is horrendous, because it's also set in the 1980s. It's that very much kind of greed is good sort of stock brokering. But like it doesn't really say anything about that. It's just weird that it's very deliberately chosen this setting for the plot and then not done anything with it.
Okay, that is weird.
Yeah. Also, I really hate the art. Because it's again, it's Dennis Calero. He wrote and drew this. But it's that horrible kind of sort of almost photorealistic style.
Oh, yeah.
Which looks like he sort of traced over a photograph of someone, which is bad because it means everyone has these really blobby, indistinct faces, which is terrible in a book when 90% of the characters are brown-haired man in suit. And it's just like, the colour palettes are muted as well, which is weird. It's like, you know, this should be neon and pastels because it's the 1980s.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's just annoying to see something that is like actually quite a good idea completely squandered.
Well, it happens more often than you think.
If there's one thing I've learned from being on this show, it's yes, it definitely does. Anyway, that's that. I'm done with it. I'm going to chuck it across the room, as is my wont.
Okay. Well, I'd like to thank you, Andrew.
I'll happily accept this thanks, and I don't even need to know why.
Well, I'm going to tell you why, because effectively you've just done my review of my comic.
Oh, excellent.
Wow.
God, we are being so efficient today.
I know. So I've been reading The Silent Invasion, Red Shadows, published by MBM Graphic Novels, and it's by Michael Cherkis and Larry Hancock. You know, in the 1950s, when all those sci-fi B-movies were very thinly veiled allegories for communist invasion?
Yeah.
Wait, what?
Well,
you're trying to tell me the invasion of the Body Snatchers wasn't just about aliens?
That's right.
What about the red monster that came from Russia?
No, that was one of the more thinly veiled allegories.
I actually want to really look up if I just made this up, if it actually exists.
It sounds like the kind of thing that did exist. But this, the Silent Invasion, tries to play with that idea of we use the sci-fi invasion as an allegory for a communist invasion, but what if actually there is an alien invasion as well, and they're using communists as a cover, or there's a communist invasion that's using aliens as a cover, and that's the main problem. You don't actually know. I'm not sure what this is trying to tell me. I'm not sure what this is trying to do. It dates back to 1986. This is a sort of reissue. And it was a limited edition, six-issue series from, and it states on the cover, the early days of indie comics. And it sounds brilliant. Set against the background of a nightmarish 1950s crawling with communist spies, corrupt FBI agents, McCarthyites, Stalinists, Cold Warriors, flying saucers and mysterious government organizations, The Silent Invasion weaves a Byzantine tale of mystery and deceit as bewildered investigative reporter Matt Sinkage, yes, that's his name, pursues the truth behind an insidious alien invasion of Earth that points to involvement at the highest levels of the American government.
Wow, that's clever, because like, his name is Matt Sinkage. He's getting deeper and deeper into a conspiracy.
Yeah.
That must have taken whole seconds to come up with.
And some of the blurb on the back, you know. A series that will undoubtedly become a classic. This series has it all. Great plotting, humour, suspense, and excellent stylized black and white drawings. Well, it has got stylized black and white drawings. Whether they're excellent or not, I don't know. It's got great plotting. It's got plotting. Not all of it is great. Humour, it's got a few sight gags. Suspense, yes, I'm still waiting to find out what actually happened. But the art style jars with the subject matter. The art style looks more like it should be in a sort of 50s funny pages type cartoon.
Yeah.
The nearest I would say I've seen this style of artwork in something darker is the vault tech stuff from the Fallout series of games, where it's a sort of sarcastic nod to the bright future that was promised in the 50s with all those atomic ads.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if this is like early indie comics, that's probably just, that's the style that whoever drew this can draw in.
Yeah, and it, to me, I mean, there's some visual nods to things like North by Northwest, and I suppose you could argue things like Doctor Strangelove, but ultimately it's like the worst of the worst conspiracy episodes of The X-Files, badly drawn.
I was going to say, because this does sound a lot like like an episode of The X-Files.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I can kind of understand, like, back in an age where comics were just, you know, big two superhero stuff, how this would be quite revolutionary. But I think we've probably moved on.
Yeah, and I don't know. I don't think my view of this would have changed overly much if I'd read it in 1986. And I know that, strictly speaking, Watchmen doesn't count as an indie comic, but it was a watershed moment.
Yeah.
It did change the way we viewed comics.
Yeah. Plus, also, I guess we're coming at this from a country that has had 2000 AD for, like, a while.
Yeah. And that's it. You know, 2000 AD is nearly 10 years old by the time this comic hits shelves. So, for me, it doesn't achieve what it, A, set out to, and B, claims. So I'm not a fan. There are other comics in the series, The Great Fear, Abductions, and Dark Matter, all of which I shall be doing my very best to avoid.
Okay.
Well,
yeah.
That's them told.
So we're not off to a great start this week, are we?
It's not brilliant, is it?
Come on, Rob, pull us out of this nosedive. Yeah.
Okay, well, I have a bit of a fox and hound theme going on. And first up, I have the fox from Dark Circle Comics, which, if you remember, we had the Shield and a couple of others. The Hagman, I think, was the other one, wasn't it?
Yep, yeah.
And this is by Dean Haspiel with art by Mark Ward. And the fox is basically a guy called Paul Patton Jr. And this, you know, I didn't know anything about the fox or anything like that, but he's a bit of a, his outfit is kind of Batman of the Future-esque, except with ears instead of bat ears, like fox ears, and he's got like a stylized fox symbol on the front. So it's a very simple superhero costume, all black with a symbol and ears on the hood. And those white eyes that they give all these characters who have full face costumes. So anyway, the fox is Paul Patton Jr. And he's in this, starts off in this deserted ghost town type thing. Well, no, he starts off tied to a pillar, but he's remembering how he got there, which is he went to visit this abandoned town, which is where he grew up, with his son Shinji, left his wife May at home, and they're taking photos to, you know, just basically follow the memories. But then something happens, he's not sure what, something bizarre is going on. He changes it to the fox, goes to investigate, gets knocked out, and then discovers that the person who knocked him out is actually a childhood friend of his who has been transformed into something odd. And she is apparently the bad guy, but he decides because of their past relationship, he's going to let her go. Shinji isn't happy about it. But in amongst all this, there's a degree of wisecracking, which I thought was, you know, I wasn't too sure about, but as I read this more and more, the art started growing on me a lot more, and the humour started getting to me a lot more as well, because the fox is basically up against Smiley Corporation, who, I think it's Smiley or Big Smile Corporation, and they're a technology firm, multi-billion dollar, yada, 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 but the leader is basically a supervillain. And he's put a bounty on the head of the fox for reasons that the fox doesn't really understand, because as far as the fox was concerned, you know, he's trying to retire. And so the bounty is $1 million for the head of the fox, and it gathers a bunch of supervillains, my favourite of which is the Gasser, because the Gasser only ever refers to himself in third person. For example,
excellent.
Yeah, for example, when he turns up at this meeting of supervillains to find out who their target is going to be, the one of the guys says, "You're late, Gasser," and Gasser says, "With effect." The Gasser times his comings and goings to the very split second, like the coiled cobra who, and then he's interrupted, saying, "Oh God, this is why you're always the last invited to these things. Cut the crap, they're waiting." Everybody hates him because he's so far up his own backside, and he likes referring to himself in the third person.
Which, I mean, if I was a supervillain, I would absolutely do that.
I mean, another example, you cannot outrun the gas's swirling veil of doom. Do you feel it corroding your very senses? Perhaps you will curl into a whimpering ball, easy prey for the gas's toxic onslaught, or perhaps you will plunge from a rooftop too delirious to save yourself. Either way, the Gasser triumphs. Such is the Gasser's brilliance. Fox replies, "Shut up, Sir Gasser." He's like, "Gasser!" So anyway, yeah. Fox is up against this army of this small cadre of supervillains. And for some reason, his son has decided to join the family business, donning a white suit with a black logo and calling himself Ghost Fox. Now, Paul doesn't know about this, and he's surprised. His son Shinji and him are at odds. He wants Shinji to have a quiet life. He knows what being the fox is all about. Doesn't realize that not only is his son involved in this, but various other people in this issue also want to be part of the Fox family. And I'm going to leave it at that, because when you find out who the last person who wants to be the Fox is, then it's kind of a, you what? So all of this was for this reason.
Is it by any chance their pet fox that wants to join the Fox family?
No, it's not. I'll admit, it's a little bit kooky and a little bit quirky, and It's not bad at all. I'm quite impressed at how much I enjoyed this. And it was a bit of a left field choice for me as well, but it worked. It works on several levels, and it's not perfect. The story is like Fruit Loops, and you have all sorts of weird characters showing up who have no background to them whatsoever. And so you just have to go with it. You know, you just have to say, okay, yeah, it's fine. I don't know who any of these characters are. I'm sure I'll learn more about them later on.
And I think I found that with the other Dark Circle stuff that I covered. I don't know about, I mean, obviously you've read that one in isolation. I don't know whether you've read the others after I've done with them.
I've read The Shield. I haven't read the other one yet.
But it almost smacks of Dark Circle doing in comic book form what the Marvel series on Netflix have done, that build up to a Defenders crossover type.
Yeah, I'll admit, I do get that sense from the Fox that it is leading up to something.
Yeah.
So anyway, over to Andrew.
Yep. So I have been reading Hellboy, the short story, well, the complete short stories, Volume 2.
Ooh.
Which, much like Volume 1, does not actually contain the complete short stories.
That's why they're in
powers combined.
Is it the complete short stories then?
It is the complete short stories. So, this is, yeah, it's all right.
Just all right?
No, I'm kidding.
Oh, moving on.
I loved it. I'm sent away that maybe I shouldn't be reviewing Hellboy stuff.
But you've done so much of it already.
I know, but the problem is it's always, yeah, it's Hellboy, he has an adventure, and I love it because I love Hellboy.
Yeah.
And like, all the Hellboy stuff is good.
I don't think I've actually read an actual bad Hellboy story. I've read some mediocre ones, but not an actual bad one.
I think I ought to hold up my hand here and say I've never read a Hellboy story. I've only seen the films.
Well, at least you're familiar with who Hellboy is then.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We also have two volumes of short stories that you can use to acquaint yourself with him. Yeah.
Excellent.
And to be honest, the films are pretty good anyway, and Ron Perlman is amazing as Hellboy.
They are. I actually rewatched both of them quite recently.
Yeah. Have you seen the animated movies?
You know, I still haven't, which is shocking and appalling. And
Do you want me to bring them to you on Saturday?
Oh, do you? Yes, please, because that has been my main problem. It's just I can't find them in decent quality anywhere.
I have them on proper official DVDs, so I will bring them.
Oh, yes, please, gimme.
So anyway, back to the short stories.
Yeah, the short stories, they're great. The kind of, I think the short stories are actually kind of my favourite kind of Hellboy thing. Just the idea of him sort of roaming the world, getting into these scrapes with various folklore creatures. And then, like, invariably something crazy happens. And then he'll usually just say something like, oh, that was weird. And the story will end. I look, because that, for me, that's just the quintessential Hellboy experience.
There it is.
That actually reminds me of, I'm sure you'll have heard of it. There's an anime series called, I think it's like Mushishi.
Mushishi, yeah.
Yeah, that I remember.
Ginko is an amazing character. The whole point of Mushishi is basically in the world, there's the natural world, but there's something that kind of overlaps the supernatural and natural world, and they call them Mushi. Nobody really understands what they are, and they always take the, you know, there's so many different versions of them. And so people still don't know how to deal with Mushi because they're part supernatural. And so they have to have these professional people who go around dealing with them, and they wander around. And Ginko, the main character, is one of these people. He's basically like a medicine seller. And he goes around dealing with people's problems with Mushi. And Mushishi is basically just a series of, it's kind of an episodic series where you just find out more about the world around you. And it's really quite marvelous. It's one of the only.
Yeah, I love it because like, it's the same thing as this, just the idea of this kind of implacable man roaming the world, encountering all these weird different folklore things.
And Mushishi is one of only two anime series that I gave a perfect 10 to.
Did you track it? Because I think I've seen like one series of it on Netflix. I should really track down the rest of it.
Yep.
Because that is entirely my jam.
It is. It is very
much like Hellboy.
Actually, if you do like Mushishi, there are others I could recommend after the show.
Oh, good. Do. And send me completely legal links, please.
Will do. I have them on DVD.
Oh, okay, yeah, then please just give me the actual legal stuff then.
Well, I didn't say the DVDs were legal, okay?
Oh, you've gone and ruined it, Rob.
No, fan subs are a thing because they're not officially released in the West.
Okay, I feel like if there's literally no legal way of me watching it, I feel like it's morally acceptable.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll probably just do it otherwise anyway. Anyway, the Hellboy short stories, they are all very good, and there's a couple that I absolutely love, because one of them is, I think I mentioned in the first set that The Corpse is one of my absolute favourites.
Yeah.
And probably my other one, which is in this collection, is The Troll Witch.
Ooh.
Which is a Hellboy. He's in Norway, I believe, basically investigating some people who have been, you know, seemingly killed by trolls.
Mm.
And so he goes to the house of a woman known as the Troll Witch, and she basically tells him her backstory, which is that kind of a witch gave her mother two flowers, one incredibly beautiful, one shriveled and ugly, and said, you know, eat this beautiful flower and you shall have a beautiful daughter. So she did, and she had a perfect, beautiful daughter.
Mm.
But wanting to give her husband a son, she also ate the ugly flower and ended up having another girl who was ugly and kind of horribly deformed. However, the two sisters loved each other so much that the mother, you know, couldn't bear to part them. Until one day, the sisters heard the sound of trolls outside their house, and the ugly sister was kind of possessed of a great need to go out and fight the trolls. So she did, barehanded, and kicked their asses. However, while she was doing this, the beautiful sister stuck her head out the window, and a troll took it off and replaced it with a cow's head.
Wow.
And so the troll witch, well, she got on her goat, she picked up her wooden spoon, and she rode into Trollheim to rescue her sister's skull. And so, like, at the end of the story, she basically tells Hellboy, and now the trolls are back. So here, take my wooden spoon, because last time I gave the trolls such a beating, they won't dare return to their cave if you're holding this. And, like, it says something along the lines of, like, the wood still echoes with the sound of their broken bones.
That's amazing.
She's such a badass.
See, this is another reason why I love the Hellboy stories, because the female characters in Hellboy are just as badass as the men without being, like, overtly sexualized in any way.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. Like, I think if you read some of the earlier stories, there's a bit of awkwardness with Liz Sherman.
Yeah.
Which, coincidentally, that's mainly in the story co-written by John Byrne. It's almost like he's a horrible human being.
Yeah, because I never noticed much awkwardness in the ones written by Mike Mignola that involved Liz Sherman.
Yeah, no, that is like the beginning of Liz Sherman turning into, well, if you read like the most recent issues of Hellboy, basically a god.
Mm.
Right. Also, I'm going to mention my other favourite story, Buster Oakley Gets His Wish, which is about kind of an American teen in somewhere in the South, I forget where, who basically prays to Satan and then seemingly disappears in a giant flash of light. And so Hellboy comes to investigate, and guess what? It's actually aliens. And I just, because it's such, even by Hellboy standards, it's such a weird twist.
It is. I mean, it's the kind of thing that you don't see coming. That kind of reminds me of, you know, the early porridge incident. When Hellboy pancakes. Yeah, that was it. Pancakes. When Hellboy tries pancakes for the first time,
he has tasted the pancake. All is lost.
This is our darkest day.
So yeah, it's all good stuff as always. I think the last thing I want to give a little shout out to is because at the end it features basically Mike Mignola's sketchbook, which might have three pages of just the most Mignola thing I've ever seen.
Oh,
because page one, monkeys. Page two, demon monkeys. Page three, more demon monkeys.
Hey,
that is so Mignola.
You could never have too many demon monkeys, I find.
Yeah, that was very much Mignola's thing. Like, basically, he even says, like, I probably only needed two or three to, like, get them right for the story, but I just wanted to keep drawing them. Yeah, that is Hellboy the Complete Short Stories.
Awesome.
I would say the only reason I would tell you not to buy it is if you already have it. And even then, maybe just buy another copy.
And then give it to me.
Give it to Mick. Because he's not getting his hands on this one.
Aww.
This is mine now.
But I want to read it.
Note to self, send the demon monkeys round to Andrew with simple instructions to seize Hellboy books.
Joke's on you, because that's how I wanted to go anyway.
Oh, no. They're not going to hurt you, Andrew. They're just going to make you watch.
My God, they're going to leave me alive but without my Hellboy books.
Yes.
You're a monster, Mick.
I know.
But no, yeah, I'll let you borrow this.
Is it me now?
Yes.
I mean, yeah, if you must.
Okay. Right. Who likes Kamala Khan, Miss Marvel?
I do.
All right.
I do as well. I'm glad we covered that up. Okay.
Excellent.
Rob, your turn.
Who likes Iron Man?
He's all right.
Thor?
I like Thor.
Are you one about Jane Foster or Odinson?
Odinson.
He's all right as well.
I like the big dummy.
See, I prefer Thor when he's speaking in these and those.
Oh, well, you might like Avengers Back to Basics.
Okay.
But, again, I'm going to bow down to the surge of comics because Avengers Back to Basic features some of the less well-traversed corners of the Marvel Universe.
Oh, my God, who's in it? Is it Angal Screamer? Is it Stingray?
Nomad?
Oh, Nomad. Wait, which Nomad?
Not saying. Bit of a spoiler.
Right, excellent. Thanks. But there's like seven, Mick. And I said that as a ludicrously large number, but I don't think it's that far off.
Maestro?
Oh, Evil Hulk. Evil Future Hulk with a beard.
Thunder Frog?
Throg the Frog of Thunder.
Yep.
Yeah. Majors?
What's an ordinary human? Majors. Which Majors?
Again, not telling. Spoilers.
Great, thanks, Mick. that's either like the evil version of Adam Warlock from an alternate future.
But what if I tell
a big pile of robot goo?
What if I tell you there are at least three different versions of Iron Man in this?
Yeah, that seems about par for the course.
Including the original, you know, the big gold one that looks like a shiny Hulk.
Oh, that one. The one that had the design and functionality of basically a Zippo lighter.
That's the one. So, yeah, Back to Basics is exactly the kind of gratuitous sort of best of cash-in story that I would normally hate. Because it's obviously designed with a bit of nostalgia in mind, so we go back to the original Avengers. We get flashbacks to some original sort of costumes and outfits and naming. There's a story where the Hulk is referred to as Bob Banner.
Oh, yes. That's what's led to the slightly awkward retcon that his full name is like Robert Bruce Banner.
Yeah. Missing out entirely the TV continuity where he's David Bruce Banner.
Yes, everyone loves Robert Bruce David Eric Banner.
So, yeah. So you get to see both the sort of semi-clad and fully clad versions of Captain Marvel. And a Black Panther costume that I've never seen before. And of course, it all kicks off with the Ragnarok, because comics, so there's more than one Ragnarok. And this is one of the Ragnaroks that isn't covered in the Thor Ragnaroks that I covered a few weeks ago.
Oh,
or indeed, the Ragnarok
like
that's in the movie. Yeah. But basically, it starts off, Kamala Khan has been given some goggles by the Vision. Some
that
VR goggles. VR goggles that are linked to a database in Avengers Tower that sort of has details of all their previous shenanigans. And it allows Kamala Khan to experience the adventures as if she was there, rather than, I don't know, Vision putting him on a PowerPoint presentation.
Oh, wow, this is a very obvious nostalgia cash-in.
It is. But for all that, it's actually really quite enjoyable. So you get the flashback. It's the most scowly version of Thor I've ever come across, to be honest.
He was quite a serious bloke back in the day.
Yeah. So it's basically about a Ragnarok brought around by Fenris being woken up from his burial in the Earth. And obviously the Avengers have to stop it. And, you know, for the most part, Kamala's just an observer because obviously VR, she's not actually there. So it's kind of like we're watching Kamala reading a comic, almost.
Yeah, she's an audience surrogate, basically.
Yeah. And that one, go through. I'm not going to tell you whether the Avengers win or not, because that'd be a spoiler, right?
I think they all die horribly.
Anyway, Kamala's viewing is interrupted by her mom, who's keen on her getting her studies done and her sleep slept and her food ate, rather than messing around with those goggle things. And then we have another story where the current Avengers are in a bit of a tussle with a wrong'un, who ends up rewriting reality.
He's just a wrong'un, is he?
No, but again, spoilers.
Okay.
And we do name check some Infinity War stuff and Skrulls. But basically, someone comes to Earth who looks like a Skrull that's trying to impersonate Carol Danvers. And there's also a Carol Danvers. And so there's a big fight.
I mean, that's just a rookie Skrull mistake.
It is, to try and gain the confidence of the Avengers. And I'm not going to tell you how it pans out. But needless to say, reality gets rewritten because someone gets their hands on an Infinity Cube.
It's really a Cosmic Cube.
A Cosmic Cube, sorry. Cosmic Cube. It's cubic and it's cosmic, yeah, I guess. And that's what causes this reversion to old versions of characters. Anyway, this, again, I'm not going to tell you whether they sort that out or not.
So is this still the same story?
This is still the same story because it's all about Kamala going back in time through the VR goggles, except it kind of isn't the same story. Are you with me so far?
No.
Absolutely not, no.
No.
Because at the end of the reality warping story, which is set in the present day, it then cuts to Kamala putting the goggles on again for no apparent reason, because comics.
Wait. Is it basically Total Recall, the Marvel comic?
Kind of, yeah.
Okay. Now I get it. Now I'm on board.
Yeah. It makes more sense now.
Yeah. We do get this hint that someone has managed to get into Kamala's room and fiddle with the goggles, making an adjustment.
Okay, that was a sentence that could have ended very badly.
So she then goes on to the VR goggles and gets into an adventure with the original Avengers at a time when perhaps they're not busy mates with Hulk. And Hulk, because he's feeling unwanted and unloved by the Avengers, has teamed up with Prince Namor.
Of Abslantis.
Yeah. It's actually the middle of Avengers number 3 from 1963. One of the few comics that's actually older than me.
That is a feat.
But the shenanigans of the fiddling with the goggles causes Kamala to pixelate and become part of the adventure. She actually becomes part of the original Avengers team.
Wow.
I know, right?
It's like if you die in the game, you die in real life.
But then, as a result of the reality-bending shenanigans that have been going on, and the twiddling with the goggles, and the stuff, and the thing, and the quite bizarre Iron Man costume, there's a personal tragedy for Kamala. And the future of the world, and the timeline as we know it, is left in the balance, and the maniacal hands of a man whose surname apparently is The Conqueror.
Oh, Clive.
No, his brother Kang. So all that excitement and Kang the Conqueror. There's guest appearances by Loki.
Is it normal Loki or is it like the fabulous Loki?
He's fairly fabulous. He's, you know, he does the usual, I'm casting no shadow to make you think I'm not here when I'm actually here type scenario.
No, I mean, because they've got a version of Loki that I define these days as the fabulous Loki. The normal Loki is the one who's, you know, who's quite serious and, you know, he's a little bit sad about stabbing his stepmom and stuff like that during the war. And then there's the fabulous Loki who does cameos in other people's comics and he's, you know, flamboyant and, you know, mocking and everything like that.
I think this is more the fabulous one.
Yeah.
Well, he
seems to show no remorse whatsoever.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's one of those comics. Plot-wise, it's flimsy. It does feel like it's a shameless nostalgia cash-in, but it's really enjoyable for all that, possibly because of that. So, yeah, I enjoyed it. It's a quick read. It's not at all taxing. It's good fun. And nostalgia fans will probably spend even more time than I did going, all right, oh yeah, that. So, yeah.
Awesome.
Good read. So we kind of turned it round a bit.
We have. I do have one more thing, which, like yours, Mick, the story.
Oh, no, we thought we got away with it, but you've actually Columbo'd us.
No. I was going to say, like yours, Mick, the story is flimsy, right? And nonsensical, but it's delightful and funny and charming. And it's, well, it stars everybody's favorite superdog. And I'm not talking about Crypto. I am obviously talking about Lockjaw and his own adventure, Who's a Good Boy?
It's Lockjaw. He's a very good boy.
He is a very, very good boy. And so this is by Daniel Kibblesmith with art by Carlos Villa. And it collects Lockjaw number 1-4, but it's also got bits from Thing 2005 number 4 and material from Girl Comics 2010 number 2, Original Sins number 1, and Inhumans, Once and Future Kings issues 1-5.
Oh, cool! Because I've read that Lockjaw miniseries, and that's delightful.
Yeah, so it's got the Lockjaw miniseries, which starts off with on New Arctilon, which is on the moon, with Medusa and Black Bolt, and she's commenting on how Lockjaw can go anywhere he wants, and Lockjaw's just kind of staring at the Earth, and then he goes on to previously. Lockjaw is a giant teleporting bulldog, because comics.
Hold on, they've nicked our line.
No, they haven't. I've just put that in there.
All right. Oh, that's okay then.
Yeah. Born of inhuman experiments on canines, his powers allow him to travel and carry others thousands of miles and even across dimensions. He is a loyal companion of the inhuman royal family, especially the king, Black Bolt, with whom Lockjaw spent much of his puppyhood. Even Black Bolt, however, knows little of Lockjaw's original family, and sometimes a dog's got to strike out on his own, which Lockjaw does on this very night, and he goes and meets up with Karnak, who is more Karnak than normal Karnak in this comic, and I kind of love the fact that he is. He's eating Wonder Puffs in the middle of the night, and he just, you know, his senses go off, he goes, I see you. Do not test me, dog. I know your weakness. Karnak knows everything's weakness. Which is,
I think Karnak's been taking a cue from TV, Karnak.
Yeah, I know.
Working on the special plant farm.
Yeah. But then the scene shifts to, do you remember Demolition Man?
The film, yeah.
No, not the film. The former wrestler who turned superhero. And he's lost his powers now, and he's angry at the rest of the world. And he manages to punch through his TV. And he's living in a house, and living in that house as well is Mrs. Gillespie, who has a dog called Bixby, who is also a bulldog. You know, it's a suspiciously large bulldog, yeah. And it's just a normal day for D-Man, whose name I've forgotten.
Dennis Dunphy.
That's it, Dennis Dunphy.
I'd like to point out that he died once, and you know how he got brought back to life?
How?
Some kid accidentally summoned him when he messed up a satanic ritual.
Oh, God.
He was trying to summon a demon.
Hang on. Why does that sound like a plot right out of Discworld? Because it is a plot right out of Discworld. Isn't that what happens in Eric?
Yeah. When Death turns up and says, I was at a party.
No. It's the plot from Eric, which is supposed to be Faust. You got some kid trying to summon a demon. Because it comes after Sorcery, where Rincewind stays in the dungeon dimensions to fight off the odd things that live there. And everyone thinks Rincewind is dead, but then this kid in some town just tries summoning a demon, and the actual demons are interfering because they don't like the way hell's run these days, and Rincewind ends up appearing.
Oh, yeah.
And gets mistaken as a demon. Back to Lockjaw. Lockjaw basically crashes a kid's birthday party right at the beginning. And he's
he crashes Bixby's birthday party.
Is it Bixby's birthday party?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is.
No, it's the Crawford family reunion. Sorry.
Have either of you two read this comic?
Yes, it's. Lockjaw crashes the Crawford family reunion and causes all sorts, and then turns up outside the house, barking at the house, only for Lockjaw and Demolition Man, or D-Man, to be attacked by hamsters who come from another dimension through a portal in space and time, and they're travelling in these little flying hamster balls with laser beams and stuff like that, and they're there to capture Bixby. Now, Lockjaw and D-Man obviously take the fight to the hamsters and drive them back, at which point Lockjaw gets acquainted with Bixby, and you realise that there's some kind of familial thing between the two of them. The scene shifts. Lockjaw teleports to a different place, but this time D-Man goes with him, and they end up in the Savage Land where they meet Abzar. No, sorry, Kazar. But it does literally say Abzar on this because Kazar has those abs.
Him and Namor should have an Abzar.
Kazar has been doing interesting things in the Savage Land, which is apparently Antarctica's hottest hotspot for 1 million years and counting.
Yes.
Yeah, Kazar has been trying his hand at farming. Things are developing.
And it has not gone well.
No, it's not gone well. But there's a tribe of giant wolves, and they get attacked by the giant wolves, only for them to find out that the leader of the giant wolves is actually another bulldog with feathers around its head, who's just wandering around proudly. And then they go off again, but this time they go off to a different dimension where they're attacked by a bunch of anthropomorphic animals who are Thunderball, or who is basically an owl with electric attacks, Smile Diver, a dolphin with sharp teeth, the Whisker, who is a cat who basically uses a whisk as a weapon, and Maldozer, the team of supervillains also known as the Wrecking Zoo. And who comes to save them but Spider-Ham?
God, I love the Zooniverse.
The Zooniverse is great, but this is where you also meet another great play on words, because you meet Lockjaw's younger brother, Dockjaw.
I think Dockjaw's a girl, I think, actually, isn't she?
Sorry, oh, yeah, younger sister, sorry, the pink glasses. Lockjaw's younger sister, sorry, Dockjaw. And then she tells D-Man and everybody what actually happened. And it's actually kind of tragic, the whole story of Lockjaw. But, who they're up against is just hilarious. And I'm going to leave it there, because who they're up against when you find out is just kind of, really? Lockjaw beats him?
Yes, because Lockjaw beats everyone.
Because he's such a good boy.
Yeah, he is. After that, there's another story where it starts off on New Attilan, on Arc Attilan, whatever you want to call it. And it involves a Fantastic Four, and it's basically a story about Ben Grimm becoming the new owner of Lockjaw. Type thing.
Yes, I remember that one, because that's from Dan Slott's Thing series, yeah. Which is one of my faves.
And I love the fact that Ben and Lockjaw are like the ideal partnership, aren't they?
Yeah, because like Ben Grimm is basically like a crotchety old man.
Yeah.
Of course he would have a big slobbery dog.
Yep. And then after that it goes into a series of other shorts, one of them is brilliant. It's so well drawn. The artwork is wonderful. And it's on New Attilan, and you got Crystal and Gorgon and Karnak and everybody trying to catch this thing, this whatever it is. And it turns out to be Lockjaw, who's covered in dirt and is trying to avoid having a bath. And the last page is just the grumpiest I've ever seen Lockjaw looking. It's wonderful.
Oh,
and then you're back to like the chibi comics. Some of them are great, but some of them are just even greater than great. This is, and I think my favorite is Lockjaw versus Thanos. Have you read that one, Andrew?
I've not read that one.
I'm not going to tell you what happens, but it's wonderful. Lockjaw,
I'm about to snatch this and kind of read these other little bits.
Lockjaw, who's a good boy, is amazingly funny and charming and just delightful. And it's, you know, if you're a dog person, hell, if you're a cat person or a dog person, it doesn't matter. You can enjoy it. And it's got the best picture of Lockjaw on the cover as well.
Also, I like how you've slightly altered the title to be like a statement rather than a question.
How do you mean?
Well, so instead of saying, Lockjaw, who's a good boy?
Yeah.
It's Lockjaw, who's a good boy.
He is, because he's a very good boy. We know this. There's no question about it. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that is a good place to end the show on.
Yeah.
What, when we've run out of comics?
Yes. Yes.
That's the best way to end it. So, yeah. We
never run out of comics.
Yeah, we never do. But anyway, until next time, I have been Rob.
I've been Andrew.
And I've been Mick.
And we'll see you all later.
Thanks for listening.
Goodbye now.